You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. It's Monday. We're going to get you through the beginning of the week by talking about the Celtics' big buzzer-beating win over the New York Knicks. That was on Friday. Haven't done a show since then. 104-102. Also coming up, a little discussion about the first half issues. Gordon Hayward, maybe a little bit of Marcus Smart. And then we'll put three guys on the taco mobile. And joining me, I guess we call this a McKenny Monday, Chuck McKenny from RedsArmy.com.
That's terrifying, a McKenny Monday. I feel for everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Jesus. No, I'm feeling good, man. This team. I'm all smiles here.
This is great. They're 4-1. They have looked, I want to say halfway decent, because second halves they've looked like great. The first halves, they look like shit. We'll talk about that later on. But let's focus on the Knicks game, which looked like shit for most of it. Like, that was a bad game. There was very little that came out of that that felt good. But after the game, everybody was talking about, like, look, we grinded it out on a bad night against a team that did some things different from the last game that gave us trouble. And so, Which side of this do you want to take? Do you want to take the, oh God, I can't believe they struggled to beat the Knicks, or, hey, they had a bad day and they still beat the Knicks?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna take the latter, right? I think this team is, you know, without Brown.
I don't even
Brown...
know who you are anymore, Chuck.
well, hear me out. I'm just very rational, logical, analytically.
I definitely don't know who you are anymore.
I mean, they were without Jalen and without Kanter. So, you know, this team is very top heavy. So when you take two out of the top eight guys, I mean, it doesn't matter who they're going to be playing. There's going to be a drop off. So, I don't put them in the class of where they should be blowing out. You know, they should be blowing out the Knicks when they're missing two of their top eight guys. I just don't have them there yet. So everything is, you know, when I saw them, you know, really just slog through that first three quarters or whatever, it was most of the game, because they would, you know, even when the brief moments they would stretch a lead a bit, and, you know, New York would make some plays or the Celtics would fall back. So, you know, Tatum saved their ass. Yep. And that's fine. That's what happens, right? Like you were saying, that's what happens. Sometimes your star player bails you out when you're just not having your best game. And it's perfectly fine to have that, whether it's game five, you know, 45 or 75. So, you know, I'm cool with that. It's all roses over here, man.
Look, you want to say that they should have maybe hit more shots? I mean, yeah, you could hit more shots. Should box out a little bit better? Yeah, for sure. We all want, like, the clean, like, beginning to end. This is just going well. The Knicks are the Knicks, and they're terrible. And you kind of cruise your way to a 15-point win. And in the moment, some people might be upset. Although I will say, like, I haven't seen a bunch of people upset at this game. Like, they're just – maybe it's because it was a Tatum buzzer beater that everybody's kind of happy about it. But, like, no one that I've seen is like, oh, God, this team this was a bad performance and they got lucky. People seem to be generally positive about this. And when you go back in – March, and you say, how could our seeding have been better? What do? You go back to the schedule, the results page on Basketball Reference, and you say, win over the Knicks, that's good. You just gloss right past it. You look at the losses that you're like, oh, that's a bad loss. Like if they lose on Tuesday night in Cleveland, that's a bad loss no matter what. But this, you're like, oh, win, chalk it up, doesn't matter. The quality of the win doesn't matter months from now. But I wonder if just this team being not last year's team, people are like, yep, it's a win. Yay, let's celebrate. Move on.
Done. Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're still there. But not everybody came in with such a rosy outlook for this team, right? I mean, I'm a 50 win. You know, I predicted 50 wins. I feel like they can be the third team in the East, but I don't think everybody was like that. And also, you know, we're still trying to figure out what's happening at center. So there's still concerns there, especially with Cantor out. And, you know, I think I don't know. I think that it's a little bit to what you say. It's not last year's team. And, you know, the cop out is it's early. We're still trying to feel like what should our expectations be with this team, right? If, you know, if they're 8-1 and everyone starts feeling themselves, then I think we're going to start to see some fans get a little pissed off if they have, you know, crappy performances against crappy teams, right? Because we'll start to set our own expectations. So I think that a lot of it has to do with most fans aren't really sure where this team fits, right? Are they going to be one of those underdog, up and coming, chippy teams, which I think to some degree they will be. Or are they going to look like they're one of the stronger teams in the East? So until that really settles, I think fans are a little unsure, you know, where to place their expectations. So after any sort of win, we're like, yeah, feeling good. Feeling good. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that's generally the way people are feeling. Like, okay, so the Knicks changed up how they played against the Celtics. They switched everything, which threw the Celtics off. And Brad said, yeah, they did something crazy. Like they started the game with Mitchell Robinson guarding Gordon Hayward, which I can't imagine Gordon Hayward coming down being like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
It was a half court set and Mitchell Robinson just walked over and just checked like, this can't be right. And then the Celtics start setting screens and they switch everything so they can get onto their actual matchups. And like the Celtics are like, wait a second, to which you would say, well, maybe you shouldn't be setting screens. And then the Celtics would be baited into playing this ISO ball, which that's their weakness. You can't have a bunch of ISO ball. So it was a really slick plan by Fizdale. And we'll see how the Celtics, if they react differently to that whenever it is they play the Knicks again. But they were thrown off. They were flat out thrown off. And I can tell you, nobody in the media wanted to be there either on Friday night. Everybody was just standing there like, do we have to be here tonight? Do I have to be writing about this game? I know people listening are like, what are you talking about, man? Who wouldn't want to be there? But like, it was just, I don't know, the slog of the week. It was Friday night. It was the Knicks. We knew it was going to be a gross game. Like, just nobody was feeling it at all. So I guess the Celtics might have gotten caught up in that. So
yeah, but, you know, like you touched on, I mean, this is starting to become a pattern for them, right? I mean, this sort of sloppy first, you know, first half,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I think we've seen you wrote about it and Gary Washburn wrote about it. The numbers are just, you know, they're jaw-droppingly bad in the first half, at least offensively. And it's not just a couple guys. It's, you know, it's the three best players, Walker, Hayward, and Tatum, who just cannot shoot. And I mean, do you want to attribute, I mean, the Knicks definitely mixed up something from the first time they played them, but this is the first team they played twice. What's the excuse for those other games? And is it just something where it's still everything's fresh for these guys where they're still, I don't know, are they thinking pass first? Are they not being aggressive enough? I mean, you see when they flip that switch, especially with Kemba, when he goes from tentative Kemba to attack Kemba. I mean, there's a huge difference in his game, but are they still trying to feel each other and then having Jaylen maybe in and out? I mean, is that just kind of a fallback excuse that they're just not gelling yet, and it takes them that 24 minutes to get going?
It could be. It's something that we'll talk about after the break. That's a good tease, Chuck. We're going to come up after the break with more on the first half problems that the Celtics are having. After I tell you that Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming, get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The Boston Celtics, as we were talking about before the break, struggle in the first half. We were talking to Gordon Hayward after the game, and we were asking him about his performances in the second half. He's like, yeah, I wish I can get some of these shots to fall in the first half. They're missing layups. So you're asking whether there's some level of still feeling each other out, which I think there is some. And I'm not sure if it's just one guy trying to get his. There are definitely instances where guys are taking shots early in the shot clock, and I don't think it's any one guy. Like, Kemba does it. Hayward does it. Tatum does it. Maybe they're trying to figure out who's got it right away, and they're all kind of taking turns. Brad Stevens is also experimenting. Like, I seen earlier in the week, he would take Gordon Hayward out at like the 6 minute mark and then bring him back at the end of the first quarter and getting ready to start the second quarter with the bench units. And then all of a sudden he did that with Tatum just to try to figure out like different lineups, who's coming out early, who's going to anchor the second unit. So there is some level of experimentation. There is also, I think, some level of just, I think guys are trying to figure each other out a little bit more. And I think Kemba is still kind of like, I don't want to have to do everything. I'm here. I'm trying to make friends with everybody. And they need to, I mean, look, I want them to kind of do their thing first. And then when the shit hits the fan, I'll do what I got to do.
Yeah. You know, they look so good in that, in the second half when they're all attacking. They just look, you know, it's not planned out this way, but it's so beautiful to watch, like, Walker come down, you know, hit a pull up three, and then he might come down the next possession and get to the line. And then, you know, just when the defense is starting to think, oh, we can't let Kemba go off, boom, there's Tatum. Or there's Hayward creating, and you start to see this, and you're like, holy crap, like this is really the ceiling for this team, at least offensively. I'm like, wow, this is beautiful. Like, they just have this, you know, they should have this four-headed offensive monster out there. And you know, I think two of them are just can be elite scorers, are obviously Tatum and Kemba. But watching, there was that one play, I think it was against the Knicks, where the NBC had Comcast had kind of highlighted when Hayward drove, and he was like under the basket on the baseline, and four guys were really just like focused on him, and he's such a great passer, and he's able to find the open guy in the perimeter. And just watching Hayward's playmaking ability with these, you know, with Walker's and Tatum's, you know, shot making ability, man, when it's working, holy crap, it's like, whoa, I need to take a shower, man. It is really good. So it's, you know, I think ideally you just want to see more of that earlier in these games. But when they're going, you almost feel like, wow, we can hang with anybody. You know, we saw that against Milwaukee. That was a little bit of a different formula because, you know, Smart had his hands all over that game. But just watching those guys, I mean, this team is top heavy, and that's how they're going to win, when those guys are playing their best. But it's, man, it's beautiful when they're going. Really is.
It sure is. It sure is, because, yeah, it does show how well they can work together. Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum have been working especially well together. Like, I don't have their numbers in front of me, but I feel like they're like assisting on one another's baskets a lot, especially in those second halves. I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is. Some of it for sure is cold shooting. Like these guys are just not hitting shots early on for some who knows reason. There's definitely maybe more of a sense of urgency. And Brad leans on these guys a lot more, I think, in the second halves as well. Like in the first half, especially the past couple of games with no Cantor, no Jalen, he's really gone to the bench. Like in that Milwaukee game, the bench was outscored by 29 points in an 11 point win. Like,
yeah.
And because that bench, like you're playing guys that you normally wouldn't play because two of your top players are out. But those guys still have to play. You can't play your top guys 48 minutes a game in October. You're just asking right. for problems. So I think that part of the first half is, well, these guys can't play all the time. And again, in the past couple of games, it's been highlighted especially. And then down the stretch, those guys are playing bigger minutes in the second half and down the stretch where they're able to kind of take over and work off of one another. And in the Knicks game, maybe part of why they didn't is because Brad was holding guys out and not playing them, I don't think, as much. Like Tatum played 33 minutes where he had been playing 37, 38.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Smart played 30. Kemba played 35. Kemba's been right up around like 35, but that's actually still a little bit low. Hayward 35. I mean, those guys have played, let's see, Tatum played 39 minutes against Milwaukee. Let me pull up Kemba Walker, 38 minutes against Milwaukee. Gordon Hayward, 38 minutes against Milwaukee. So he's going to those guys a lot more. Like he wants to win those games. Against Toronto, Hayward played 37 minutes. Kemba played 36. So Brad clearly wants to win these games. Marcus Smart played 39 against Milwaukee. So but they didn't against the Knicks. Brad was just like, we're just going to roll with these bench guys because I can't overburden these guys. And I'm sure in Cleveland against a shitty Cleveland team that he's not going to have to, like, we're going to see a lot less Kemba. Like Kemba's going to play 32 minutes against Cleveland.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, the bench, like you highlighted in that Bucks game, has been, you know, aside from, Grant Williams having a couple flashes, but Edwards hasn't really shown anything at all. Langford hasn't even played.
Right.
Ogilvy got some minutes early, but I don't even know what his productivity isn't there.
No.
So, but Brad isn't afraid to roll guys out in that second quarter, right? Sometimes you're like, wait a minute, Wanamaker's out there with, Ogilvy and Edwards, and it's just like these weird combos.
Yep.
But he doesn't go back to it. I don't in the second half if it doesn't work. So he seems to have a quicker leash with at least some of these bench players. So yeah, maybe that's attributing to these higher minutes. But I don't have a problem with 35 minutes for them, right? I mean that should be for someone like Tatum and Brown and even Walker. I'm fine with 35 minutes. And if some nights it's 38 and some nights it's 32, 35 is reasonable. I mean, especially for this team, until someone shows that they're going to earn more of those minutes, I don't think, it's not like any of these guys are 32-year-old centers who need load management. So, the Celtics have all that scientific stuff. They know what they're doing, but I feel like 35 minutes is a threshold and they wouldn't be, that's not taxing anybody.
No, but Brad Stevens has always said, like, you ask him the minutes that he wants to play those guys, he'll always say 32 to 34. That's the number he wants to hit with all of these guys. And so he'll, as he has said multiple times, he'll try to steal minutes with other players Like sometimes you've just got to play a guy because it's 5 minutes of the other guy not being on the floor. And you have to throw some, especially early on, you have to throw some guys out there that would never play in a playoff game. Now, it's hard to say right now who's really not capable of playing down the stretch of a playoff game because it's so early. It's five games in. Like, Vincent Poirier does not look great. He doesn't look great.
Whoa, man. Don't go out on a limb like that.
But, you know, who knows when something clicks and if he's forced into bigger minutes. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take for him to be forced into bigger minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if that Knicks game felt like a time where he would get played bigger minutes, and he played, what, 7-8 in that game? Where's that box score here? 6.5 minutes in a game where Shemi Ojeleye got 15 and Carson Edwards got 14. But whatever. My point being that we can say right now, well, he just looks lost and slow, and you can't play him in June. Well, right now you say that, but who knows? Maybe you'll still say that in January. Maybe you won't. Maybe he'll figure something out and he'll become productive. So it's hard to say, but Brad's going to play these guys no matter what, because that is in the best interest of the Celtics to make sure that Tatum and all these other guys, Jaylen when he comes back, Hayward, all of them stay healthy. And Chuck, not healthy for like this year, like long term, because Tatum is still on his rookie contract. He gets his extension next year. Next year, he's still on his rookie contract. So he doesn't get his new contract until two seasons from now. You don't want to overtax this guy. You're afraid of overuse injuries. You're afraid of some kind of catastrophic injury. They're not going to jeopardize their future now by piling up minutes early in a season like this.
I mean, again, I'll defer to them, but if you, I just can't buy playing an extra 3 minutes a game over the course of 80 games or whatever it is going to have that much is going to be detrimental in any way. I mean, we're talking about 35 minutes. Is that the new 38 or the new 40? Because I felt like
it's basketball's version of 100 pitches.
Oh man. Wow.
That's the best way I could put it. That's the thought that just popped into my head. Where it used to be when we were young, Chuck, way back when. When did we start hearing like, oh, he's throwing 100 pitches? And like, that never seemed to be – it felt like guys threw 120, 130 pitches.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that's a pretty good analogy. Yeah.
So, I mean, 32 minutes is 100 pitches nowadays. And you can certainly go over it like they do in the playoffs, but you got to make sure you're building up to something. And look, I think part of it is the technology involved. Yeah, but also these guys, they're playing. You heard the Doc Rivers joke when guys strained their obliques. He goes, back in my day, we didn't have obliques. These guys are built differently. They're trained differently. They're raised differently to go through AAU circuits where like their entire lives become basketball. So it's just different. And for some reason, this is the science right now. Maybe it'll change, but this is what they've got. So we'll take a break. We're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit about Marcus Smart, and then we're going to hand out our three rides on the Taco Mobile. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics coming up next. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. A couple other things before we get to the Taco Mobile. I want to talk about Marcus Smart. I also want to just kind of throw out there before, like, Kemba Walker, two straight games of 14 made free throws. Like, holy shit. I just feel like I need to reference that out of nowhere. But 14 of 15 against Milwaukee and 14 for 14 against the Knicks. Like, that's That is wild to see a guy get to the line that much, Chuck.
Yeah, it single-handedly made me forget about all the, you know, the free throw problems his team had collectively because he's just going, he's knocking down at a ridiculous rate. And that's you know, that's like Harden-esque, you know, volume from the free throw line, right? So, you know, clearly we can't expect that sort of him to maintain that level. But when you just, you know, maybe that can be contagious. The more he's getting to the line, the more other folks are getting to the line. You know, that was a big problem for this team last year. So clearly it's a point of emphasis. I mean, you know, if he gets, I think if you get to the line 9, 8 to 10 times a game, you're in like the top 10 in the league, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's up there. So, you know, 14 is just like you said, obscene. So it'll come back down, but he still should be up in that top echelon. And I think it's, you know, he's a slight guy. So he took some hits in that Knicks game, where I'm like, oh shit, I don't need to see this, but
right.
You know, I don't want him to be too aggressive, but you know, find the balance.
Yeah. I mean, he had taken 16 free throws combined, 4 in each game in the first 3 games of the season, and then he went for 15 against Milwaukee and 14 against the Knicks. So, pretty stark difference. Okay. Marcus Smart. I don't know what it is about Marcus Smart, but I feel like something's different about him this year. I can't put my finger on it. Other than he's launching a bunch more threes, he's taking 6.6 threes per game this season after 5 games. He was right around 4.
Wow.
Between 4 and 4.5 in every year coming in. His average for his career is 4.3. Now, he's making 2.2. He's hitting 33% of his threes. It's a tick below league average. So he definitely has to bring that up. But he's also not taking any free throws. He's averaging 1 free throw per game. Now, last year was just 1.6. You got to go to his third year in the of his career where he hit 3.2. So he's never getting to the line much anyway, but like he's not going to the line at all now. And then the only other thing is he's shooting terribly on his 2-point attempts. He's shooting 42% on 2-point attempts where last year he shot 51%. Last year was apparently an outlier because he's 43.6% on 2-point attempts for his career. So it's just a weird start to the season for Marcus Smart, it feels like.
Well, offensively, maybe. I mean, I feel, you know, I think when he attacks, he's always looking to pass, right? I don't think Marcus is looking to draw contact and get to the line. I mean, he is leading the team in assists per game, right? So I think we've seen flashes of his playmaking ability, whether he's throwing lobs or just hitting cutters or kicking it out. So I think he's passing the ball, and I think maybe that's again, he's not looking to draw contact when he's driving into the, or when he's penetrating. Sure. Offensively. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, you just ran through the numbers, but for me, when I, you know, he's already had that signature game, and it was that Milwaukee game, which, you know, I felt like he single-handedly brought that team back.
Yeah.
When he just does everything, he's mopping the floor. Right, he's drawing charges. He's in, Giannis's mug, right? And those crazy sequences where you're like, what the hell did I just see? You know, he's flopping around, but he's defending centers. He's defending point guards. I mean, he's doing smart things. So defensively, I feel like it's classic or vintage Marcus. Maybe the offense is a little bit different, but I don't know. I think if I look at one side of the ball, I'm seeing the Marcus. We the reason why we love him is because of, you know, the defense and the hustle, and that's been there.
Sure. And obviously, like, anything he does on offense is always a plus. It's just interesting that he's taking so many three-pointers. And
really? Is it?
I mean, even –
come on.
Even for him, like, I don't know, he's, I'm looking at his field goals per game. I mean, it's still, just 10 per game, which is the most he's ever taken, but like, not by like some crazy long shot. Like last year, I don't know, the last year he took 7 in the previous, like 2 years, he took 9.5. So he's at 10.5. So he's not taking up a bunch more of the offense. Maybe he's just like, hey, I can, feels like he can hit the threes, and if that's what he does, it's all threes and layups. If he's not getting the layups, if he's attacking and he's getting, and he's making those passes, like you said, he's leading the team in assists. Maybe that's just all they need.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. I think, you know, he's clearly the first guy off the bench for the most part. Yeah. I just feel like this is crazy when you say that he's taking six threes a game. I don't feel like he's forcing anything. And I know I've probably trained my brain over the years.
No, you're right.
Since he's been here, you know, because every year it's usually like, oh, Marcus, you're still chucking threes. And maybe I've just reached my point where I'm like, Marcus is going to take as many threes as he wants if he's open. Yeah. But there's just so much else going on that it just doesn't seem – I don't see much difference on the offensive end outside of, like, being thrilled with his playmaking.
Okay.
That seems to be the best – seems to be the best part of it. His shooting has always, to me, and you look at it more closely than I do, but it always seems to be erratic. There can be games where he'll play spectacularly, and then I'll be like, oh wow, he was 0-for-7 from three.
Yeah.
Just doesn't feel. No, that's just Marcus. Really, it's just Marcus.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I don't know what it is. Maybe it is just the shot selection. But you're right there. It's not like there've been a ton of heat checks. Like he's had a couple. Marcus is always going to have a couple, yeah. But it's not as egregious as it was in the past. Like a few years ago, when we were like, oh Jesus Christ, one made three and already it's a heat check. He's kind of tapered that off a little bit. All right. Just keep on watching it and just see what happens. All right. So let's get into our Taco Mobile. Every week we give away rides on the Taco Mobile. For those of you who are new, we've been doing this for years where we give people a ride on some sort of vehicle. We've done the Mystery Machine because Jaylen Brown took a picture with the Mystery Machine. Aaron Baines had the big Australian boat because he wanted to live on a boat. Then last year it was the Taco Mobile because Jason Tatum loves tacos and his Instagram stories were full of tacos with a pound of cheese on them. So now continuing it with the Taco Mobile. Taco Fall has a big Ford F-150. Vincent Poirier is always making fun of it on Instagram, and I just like that idea. So three guys get a ride on the Taco Mobile after their performances for the past week. I'll go first. Chuck, you tell me if I assume that some of these are just common sense. You would agree no matter what. I think, obviously, Kemba Walker from this past week had big monster games. He's 32, 32, and 33 points. 32 against the Knicks last weekend. I don't know if that counts. That kind of falls in the range. 32 against Milwaukee, 33 against the Knicks. Like we said, all of those free throws. Rebounding, Chuck. Six rebounds in all but the Milwaukee game. Six rebounds total in each of his last four games. Like, taking charges? He's a monster.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, he 100% belongs in the taco truck or whatever the hell we're calling it.
Taco Mobile. No. Pay attention. I asked you to pay attention for like 5 minutes.
You just were rattling off all those stats, I'm so enamored with Kemba's shooting, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, John's right. I remember watching him rebound against Milwaukee or the Knicks, and then I'm like, yeah, he's been drawing all these charges. So I just kind of got a little flustered, and I forgot the segment we were in because it's Walker's been so good. So yes, to everything you said, yes.
Yes. Jason Tatum, I think, for sure, because 20, you know, not just point totals, but 29 against the Knicks the first time around. 16 against Milwaukee, but you know, very well timed and shot 4-of-7 from three in that game, and then 4-of-8 from three. Even though he only had 12 points, he didn't have 12 points. What am I talking about? He had 24 points. Looking at the wrong stat. 4-of-8 from three in that, and then the game winner. Yeah, I think if you hit a game winner, you get on the truck.
You do. No matter what's happened the rest of the week, you get a spot.
Now, the question here is, who gets the third spot? Because I'm not sure. Like, Gordon Hayward's numbers this week have been okay. He was big against Milwaukee. The first time around against the Knicks, he was like kind of blah. This time against the Knicks, shot kind of poorly to start. Was 3-of-6 ultimately from three. 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 13 points against the Knicks. I mean, that's a nice weak, but like.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What was the biggest win of the week?
The biggest win of the week was the Milwaukee comeback.
Right. And who was the best? Who was the best player?
I mean,
Who was primarily responsible for that? For that comeback?
No, that's
win?
Right. Gordon in the second half was just a monster in the second half. Like he was all over the place. And let me just pull up the numbers in the second half of that game, because he was like, yeah, you're right. He's the reason that.
No, that's not where I was going.
Oh, really? Are you going with?
I was going with Smart.
Oh, really?
I was going with Smart.
Are you going with Smart? Because I was going with Gordon Hayward. I thought you were making the case for Gordon Hayward because he had 16 points.
He did. Now that I'm looking at the box, I see it. You're right.
16 points, 6 assists. This is the second half. 16 points, 6 assists, 7 of 9 shooting, 2 of 3 from 3, a plus 18. It really is. Okay. So this is the debate. Does Gordon Hayward leading the comeback in the second half where the Celtics outscored Milwaukee by, like, I don't know, 20. Does he get on that truck, or does Marcus Smart get on the truck because he was the defensive catalyst and he guarded Giannis and was just a maniac? Now, he also had 19 points. Like,
yeah.
Marcus was the reason they were in the game at all to begin with. You go back to that first half and he was the only guy that was hitting shots. And Kemba afterwards made it a point to shout out Marcus and be like, hey, he was hitting shots and they were down like 16 at the half, but they could have been down like 26 and that could have changed the entire dynamic of the game. So you get a case for both guys, and neither guy had like a big other monster game to hang his hat on. So it comes down to which side wins out in that Milwaukee game. Is it Marcus or is it Gordon?
I mean, for me, Smart did his defensive thing and he had the 19 points on 5 from 11 3-point. So for him, that sort of offensive performance is so like over the top when you add it to what he did defensively,
yep.
That's where I give him the nod. Like for Gordon, when I look at his numbers, even though where he had 21 and 10 and 7, I feel like, yes, those numbers on their own aren't, I mean, they're good numbers, but I mean, they're not overwhelming, but you're right. Condense them in the second half, yes. But for me, Smart, both ends, and then his offense was so much further than, you know, that was his best offensive game of the season. I just think that, to me, he deserves it for that game.
You know what? You're a guest here. I'll give it to you. Gordon would probably rather be sitting at home playing video games anyway. He doesn't want to go for a ride.
Yeah, baby.
All right. That's the show. I want to thank everybody for checking the show out. If you're a new listener, thanks for sampling the show. You can follow me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. Chuck is @RedsArmy_Chuck. So we go back to our RedsArmy.com days. Go check out RedsArmy.com. Best blog out there. Of course, check out all of my stuff, where RedsArmy.com really gets all of their stuff. on MassLive.com. /Celtics. MassLive.com/Celtics. You add your own spin. That's, you know, that's fine. That's cool. I understand. You know, I can't be on one side of that and not like be like, oh, I guess at some point I'm supposed to get mad at the aggregators. Like, oh, aggregators. Oh, they're so infuriating to me. That's like the haughty media thing to do nowadays. Get mad at the aggregators. No, that's fine. Aggregate my shit. I don't care. Thanks for listening. A good written review, a 5-star rating would be awesome. Sharing the podcast would be great as well. Tell everybody, listen to the Lockdown Celtics podcast here on the Lockdown Podcast. I'm proud of myself for that 100 pitches reference.
That was pretty good. You pulled that out of your ass, right?
And it worked. Completely pulled it out of my ass. And all of a sudden, it just popped in my head. I'm like, ah, there yeah. It is. And now I'm going to beat it to death. I'm going to write a column about that or something. I'm going to talk to some sports science guys. Hopefully that catches on.